Englishman Benjamin Tallis heads the Centre for European Security at Prague's Institute of International Relations. An expert on European affairs, including the EU's border-free Schengen zone, he's also the editor-in-chief of the IIR's academic journal, New Perspectives. When we spoke at the think tank's offices at the foot of Neruda Street, our conversation took in various aspects of Czech foreign policy. But I first asked Benjamin Tallis how he'd ended up in Prague.
My mind always goes back to 1989, when my mum sat me down in front of the television and said, you know, sit down, watch this, it's important, you'll remember it for the rest of your life. And indeed, the first time I could go travelling on my own, I went on an Interrail trip, and I ended up spending a good proportion of that time here in Prague, having fell in love with it, and found that I could find out things here about those people that I'd seen on the television screens, but hadn't had any idea who they were, about this different architecture that I saw then and could then walk through and experience. And then the fascination grew with experience, and I moved back to Prague to do part of my first master's degree. And from there, moved down to the Balkans to work for the OSCE and then the EU, but was always drawn back to Central Europe, partly because of its connectedness, the overlapping, interlocking histories that you can still walk through, but also for the lifestyle. And so I've kept coming back there ever since and have now actually found a way to stay here permanently.
What exactly do you do here at the Institute for International Relations?
I'm the head of the Centre for European Security, which does a mixture of academic research, upon which all of our other work is founded. And then we do policy advice to various parts of the Czech government, and also on the V4 level, the Visegrad 4 country level. But we also do public engagement work through the media and through public events. The Institute more widely looks at international relations issues, but with a similar mix of activities. And in our centre, we look very particularly at the security in and of Europe, of Europeans as security actors, but also we take European approaches to security, so that's what makes us unique.
The former head of the Institute for International Relations, Petr Drulák, he was for some time the first deputy foreign minister. Mm. He's seen as being one of the architects of the Czech Republic's shift in foreign policy towards pursuing closer ties with China. Where do you stand on that move, that shift in policy?
Well, I think the so-called shift in policy has been interpreted in many ways, often quite superficial. It's been very easy to cast this as a move towards closer to China, or a move that sacrifices the legacy of human rights in favour of business. And it's very easy to pin that on a government where one of the richest men in the country is a senior figure within it. However, looking at some of the complexities of the issues that former Deputy Minister Drulák and others were dealing with, we can see there was an attempt to nuance the linking of human rights to what has been described elsewhere as imperialist crusading or humanitarian intervention, to give it another name. And it's also a focus away from purely political rights, to understand the way that people actually live, to focus on socio-economic rights, gender rights, and so on. And so perhaps the way this was portrayed was not always the way that it was actually intended, or indeed in a way that reflected the nuances of the policy. Although I have to say that's a very personal opinion on that, not one that would represent the Institute.
In general, have we seen a shift in Czech foreign policy a little bit away from the West, away from NATO, which it's a member of, and the European Union? Or is that just my impression?
I don't think there's a shift away from the West. I think there's perhaps been a shift in the West. And I think we can see the growing uncertainty in the world of what Antonio Misseroli has called this emerging multiplex world, multiply complex, without multilateral governance, with multiple spheres of influence, different powers rising to challenge the prior dominance of Western ideals, Western modes of governance, and Western ways of doing business, and also Western ways of understanding human rights and the way that is enforced around the world. So I think the position of the West, and what has been referred to in some places as a relative decline of the West in comparison to others, has made many countries consider what relations they have with countries outside of what is known as the West, but also within their alliances and within their blocs. There's no question Czech Republic is a full committed member of the EU and of NATO, which lives up to its its obligations regarding alliance structure and so on. But the big question for all countries within the so-called West, not only Czech Republic, is what is it for? What is it we actually stand for? And the current migration crisis is really exposing some fault lines in that. Is it a West of values, or is it a West based on its own interests? Where is the moral leadership, we might argue, in the West? Who's making the case for it? If we have a clearer answer to that, we could have a clearer answer to your first question.
Has the Czech Republic's foreign policy been under a kind of shadow of Václav Havel for a long time? Or is that shadow, if there is one, now fading?
Well, I think it's not only been under one shadow, it's been under multiple shadows of Václav Havel. There are many different aspects to Havel's work, Havel's character as president, Havel's record in office, his record on moral leadership and so on. And it's very interesting to see that not only foreign policy, but internal policy debates are still characterized by reference to this, with many different figures almost adopting their own personal Havel in each particular case to try and invoke a moral legitimacy for their policy. And we could see very clearly different interpretations of the Havelian legacy in that case. It's certainly clear that the point of difference for Czech foreign policy in the past was perhaps characterized by something of more of a consensus around Havelian notions than it is now. And there has been a void that has not been filled. So it certainly cast a shadow and it hasn't been filled. But at the same time, the way that Havelian legacy is used is extremely complex. The refugee crisis and the migration crisis points to a deficit of moral leadership in this country, which we could see as potentially being filled by some Havelian ideas, although they do come with consequences, as others have noted.
There have been a lot of articles in the international media about the Czech Republic's attitude to migrants. Mm. They voted against accepting the quotas. They were voted down. They've now accepted that. But has there been a cost for the country's reputation because of that stance?
Yes, undoubtedly. And I've written about this with colleagues and individually as well. There is a cost. The Czech Republic has put a position out alongside Slovakia and Hungary and to some extent Poland and Romania as well that is in contradiction to the position of the European Commission, the position of Germany and the position of France and the position of many other European Union members who see a responsibility incumbent upon them to not only uphold their international legal obligations but also to exercise some form of moral leadership based on a compassionate and Willkommenskultur, or welcoming culture of Europe. The Czech and wider Central European stance on that has been extremely counterproductive and ultimately risks some of the gains of the last 25 years. The failure to bear the burdens as well as share the benefits of Schengen is irresponsible, and it's an untenable position to hold in the longer run. The fact that Schengen means so much to people in Czech Republic and Poland, which is extremely understandable, and it's been one of the most extremely, almost unambiguously positive aspects of European membership, of integration to the European Union, only makes it more incomprehensible that these countries should not actually support the methods and measures that will continue to ensure the survival of Schengen, which is based on the need for for the integrity of the external border, for internal policing, but also burden sharing on wider migration issues. That position will ultimately have to change if the European Union is going to maintain a Schengen zone that includes Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary and Slovakia.
You mentioned Poland. Poland last week broke ranks with the rest of the Visegrad 4 on the quotas issue. It's been so long since Visegrad 4 was created. Is it effectively dead now?
No, far from it. In fact, on many issues, the V4 has been able to formulate common positions. And one of those actually is particularly going forward, the revised European security strategy, or what will become to be known as the European global strategy. And there are very clear, not only common interests, but common contributions that the V4 can make. It's unfortunate that one of the positions with which they've spoken on with the strongest common voice in recent times has been the migration issue, and also that this position has now splintered, although that was rather inevitable. The individual domestic considerations of the countries, the timing of elections, we can think of Poland and Slovakia in that case, also play a role in that. However, there are many other far greater shared interests and shared values that will actually make the V4 a potential source of relevance in the future. The crucial aspect of that is how the V4 relates to its big partners, to Germany, but also to the European Union and to NATO more widely.
How have Czech-German relations been affected by the issue of quotas and refugees? I saw today in Hospodářské noviny They said that relations were at the worst point in 20 years.
It's entirely possible. I think speculating on exactly how bad any particular situation is a good game for newspapers, but it doesn't tell us much about the actual underlying politics of the situation. Both Germany and the Czech Republic, under administration of whatever stripe, recognise the mutual interest they have in cooperating. These mutual interests are institutionalised through the European Union, but also through the economic ties, which obviously clearly are under strain somewhat at the moment with the Volkswagen scandal, but nonetheless remain a fundament of cooperation between the two countries. However, moreover, in terms of worldview and in terms of not ostracizing neighbors and partners into the east of the European Union, while remaining in strong alliance with partners such as the United States and other NATO allies, there is a clear confluence of interest and approach. However, it doesn't make it easier when there is a keynote issue such as the migration crisis upon which different attitudes are taken, even if the policy will end up being the same. Unfortunately, it seems in this case that the expense of political capital on the Czech side to defend a position that is morally untenable and does not work with their European partners will do unnecessary damage to a relationship from which they could actually extract much more if there was a willingness, which has been in too short supply.
The last thing I'd like to speak to you about is New Perspectives, which you have recently revived. Tell us about that.
New Perspectives is the English language academic journal of the Institute of International Relations. And it was formerly called Perspectives. So to enhance the nature of the change, we changed the title. And it's now an interdisciplinary journal of Central East European politics and international relations. What this means is that when in Perspectives, it was largely Czech people and people from Central Eastern Europe writing about the world, reaching a mid-level of academic prestige. What we now seek is a world-class journal with people from the world as well as people from the region writing about the region. Why have we done this? Well, in order to boost the academic community here, to boost its links to scholars elsewhere, to draw in scholars with innovative approaches to work on the region, even if they perhaps haven't been before. But also we move with trends in academia to go towards an interdisciplinary approach. So we look for geographical, historical, sociological, and anthropological takes in combination with our own perspectives from international relations.